morning, students. A little shaky, but that's okay. We did have last week off, so we're in the middle of our four-week series or class on what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Boy, if that was ever a daunting task, this would be it, right? What do you do to follow Jesus? How do you manage that every single day of your lives? Well, we're concentrating right now on Matthew 5, 6, and 7, how that passage can help us follow Jesus. It's the Sermon on the Mount. So we're using that as our guide. Last week we took a break. We heard some wonderful testimonies from people, and I thank you for those who shared and just blessed us up, blessed our socks off, and thank you. But we're back at it today. So when we read the Sermon on the Mount, it's daunting, it's challenging, it's difficult, and so it's always important to start with the foundation of the cross, knowing that it's the cross has secured that relationship to God for you. You don't have to measure up. So as we fail often in our challenge to live out the Sermon on the Mount, always remind yourself, it's not about failure and the ups and downs of how well I live the Christian life. My faith is dependent upon the cross and what Jesus did for me. However, we all want to live where we believe. Now the goal is, according to Matthew 5:48, be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. And that is the great challenge of the Christian walk, to be perfect in, as close as we can. While the goal is to be perfect, we must always remember that Christ has already made us pure in God's eyes. We're just trying to live out what has already been done for us. So, those of you who are with us from the beginning, Matthew, we started with Matthew 5, and he taught us a few important things in Matthew 5 that we all need to understand. First of all, everybody's invited. We're all invited into this kingdom life. It doesn't matter what you've done in the past, what you did 5 minutes ago. You're invited. You're invited, you're invited, you're invited. There's no one too far gone, too sinful to receive the invitation from God to live the kingdom life. And we keyed in on three characteristics that Christ challenges with in Matthew 5. If we are going to live the perfect life, you remember any of those? If you do, you get the gold star. They're mercy, peace, and purity. This is how our hearts need to be bent in life. We need to be people who have this first reaction to be pure and merciful and peaceful. And that's what he talks about in that early chapter of Matthew 5. This mercy helps us keep from developing a hard heart. We extend it to even those who we call our enemies. We extend mercy to everyone. Purity. Purity is to keep our thoughts right as we look upon the opposite sex. As we use our language to be guided in truth, we be people of purity. And to be people of peace, which guides our lives and leads us away from anger. And to love our enemies with that type of peace. These are the characteristics that a righteous person lives every day of their lives. But it is living out what God has already declared us to be. So how do we become righteous? I mean, it's easy to say, yeah, I want to be more a person of purity and mercy and peace, but quite another to actually get it accomplished. Now, if you were to guess, if I say, well, how would you suppose you could become more merciful and pure and peaceful in your life? I think the most common answer over history in the church has been, well, I could pray more. I could read the Bible more. I could go to church more often. And while those things have the potential to really help, that's not what Jesus declares in this passage. But it's probably the answer that historical the church has always given. To be more religious. If I just become more religious, then I could live out these characteristics. However, you know, if I, When we talk about the word perfect, if you remember from the first week, scholars have often defined the word perfect here as being undivided. It means we're undivided in our attention, in our priorities. We're singly focused on God alone. Now, that is a challenge. Because as human beings, we want it all. And we want freedom to choose. And so, at any point in the day, I might choose God as my number one priority. But at another point in the day, I might want to choose something else as my top priority. This is who we are. We choose different things based on our mood, our interest, our time. And we love that choice to be able to choose. But the problem with that philosophy is, it will never translate us into becoming more righteous. Because if you don't continually surrender and make God the number one choice, you can't become righteous. And then, therefore, you don't become a people of mercy, purity, and peace. Very quite simple. As we head into chapter 6 of Matthew, Jesus isn't going to tell us what to do to become righteous, because that kind of defeats the whole purpose of the Sermon on the Mount, because everybody wanted to do something. In fact, he's going to tell us instead how to keep our hearts right, because it's not about doing. The action has to start from our heart, and keeping our heart from being undivided. So what is Jesus going to tell us here in this chapter to keep us singularly focused on him? Well, he's going to tell us things that often will become the other choice that we make besides him. So he starts with these words in Matthew 6, 1. Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of the others to be seen by them. If you do, you'll have no reward from the Father in heaven. Then he gives three examples of how even religious people can have divided hearts. Number one, charity. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received the reward in full. He gives another example from prayer. And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. And finally, he gives another example from fasting. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. The first half of chapter 6 is very simple. He wants to make one thing clear about righteousness. Your devotion to him must be sincere. It is not for show. See, in this chapter, he's going to tell us about the two other things in our lives that vie for that number one spot. Because if we give in, we become divided. And our hearts become divided. And the first God we are tempted to serve is the God of recognition. We all want to be recognized for what we do good, don't we? But it is a very dangerous thing to wish for. So we need to start with being honest. We care about what other people think, don't we? About what they think of us. I bet we would be surprised how much time of our week we wonder about what people think of us. I would hope as I keep getting older that amount reduces. But if we seek the praise of people rather than of God, the scriptures tell us very clearly, we will not get blessed by God. We get our blessing from them. Very simple. We get our blessing from them. Hey, that's great. You got a blessing. You got a reward. But you're not getting one from God. If you seek an earthly reward, you will not get a heavenly one. Now, we're all human. We all fail in this regard from time to time. I wonder how long we could go, even within the week, before we fail in this regard sometimes. And that's why Jesus makes it very clear. Even in the religious world, even in church, even in your faith, you can be guilty of this. So maybe once in a while you should check yourself. When you pray, even if you have to go into your closet so no one else will see you, then do that. If that's what it takes to make sure it's not for show, it's not for impressing somebody else. Or give anonymously. It's nice sometimes when people recognize that you gave them something, and certainly I know that we all do that, but occasionally you need to check yourself. Give to someone and have them not know it's from you. Because if our righteousness is built on impressing others, then we are not truly righteous in God's eyes. Isn't it interesting that Jesus uses examples from religious practices as a way to bring home the message? I mean, if our faith can be corrupted even in the church, think about how many other areas of your life it can be corrupted in. It's your work and it's your home. And how we do things for the approval, the recognition of other people. We've all been there. It may start out real simple, just without being noticed for what you do. Then we become envious of others who receive the recognition. And finally, we become downright irritated when we don't get what we think we deserve. But you know, we must decide what we're going to grow, what we're going to fill, our ego or our soul. And if we choose to fill our ego, and I've done that so many times, my soul starts to shrivel. Because then I become all about filling up the ego. And the tricky thing about the ego is it feels good to put stuff in it, but it never gets totally full. It seems like it dissipates as much as it quickly as it fills, and so you're always trying to fill it, but it never gets full. And my soul starts to shrink and shrivel because I'm ignoring it. We dig in the second half of chapter 6 now, Matthew and the other God we are tempted to serve. I'm going to read two verses from Matthew 6. It says, 6:19 says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal." 6:24 says, "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." You know, it's funny how complicated I said these chapters were and how difficult they were to understand, and yet it's so simple, right? This part right here. It's so obvious. The top priority comes from two heavy hitters, the approval of people and money and the stuff that money brings. That's it. You're not serving God as your number one priority. There's a good chance it's one of these other two, isn't it? It's that simple. Oh, but boy, if we want to be perfect, if we want to be righteous, if we want to be undivided, we have to prioritize faith over finances, over pleasing people. Material stuff can be a cog, an important cog in our life. We function around finances. But at some point, what turns from a cog to a clog in our production of life. And the tricky thing is we cross that line without even noticing it. And we have to realize, wait a minute, I'm doing it again. I've prioritized money and the love of money and everything that money brings as my number one goal. Matthew even says, here's what happens when you start making money your number one goal. Matthew 6:31 says, "So do not worry, what shall we eat, what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? See, our love of money will bear witness in our worried thoughts. It turns into worry. We worry about all the stuff we have to keep, all the stuff we have to get. And we easily care more about our own security than his kingdom. Right? But here's the good news. If you trust God and you prioritize him and you put him first, he will reward you. Some of those rewards will take place in the distant future, but he will reward you. He also gives us something else in the meantime. Second to last verse in Matthew 6 says, "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." My friends, I don't know about you, but God is teaching me this over and over again in my life. God knows we need food and clothes. He knows what we need. He's not going to leave us without if we put him first. It's amazing how many times in my life where I've actually surrendered to God on a very difficult situation. And he provided everything else I needed that I was so worried about giving up. For me, every time I moved from one place to another in my life, it was unbearably hard. I was unbearably scared. I was mournful of what I was leaving behind. And every time I did, I wouldn't go back. Every time. When we choose him, things fall into place. I'm not saying, of course, that you're not going to have struggles or tribulations or problems along the way. Of course not. But it seems to work out. But we must choose God first in our life. Oswald Chambers says, "A disciple of Jesus has to make his relationship with God the dominating concentration for everything in his or her life, and to be carefully careless about everything else in comparison to that." See, if even us Christians, well, we think maybe sometime God is first, or at least really maybe a little bit first, but money's right there, or people-pleasing or recognition is right. And they're all kind of jockeying. And this quote just says, it can't be even close. It can't be close. God's got to be way up at the top. Nothing else can compare. What will you choose? Will you seek recognition and approval from people? Oh, but boy, our ego sure loves that. Especially when we have no self-esteem. Especially when our esteem is not derived from a God who loves us and who created us and who calls us special and wonderful. Will we choose money and the stuff it brings, thinking, oh, if we just have enough pleasure in life, life will be good? Or will we choose God and his kingdom? If we want to be righteous, if we want to be a person of peace and purity and mercy, we have one choice. The problem is, we must choose that choice over and over and over again. I have one more story to share. A worship team can slowly start making their way up if they want to. But if you've seen the movie, the Christian movie called I Can Only Imagine, you will know this. You know the song, I Can Only Imagine? We've sung it here in church. It's one of the most popular Christian songs of all time, played on secular radio at different points. And the song was written and performed by the band Mercy Me. But this song was almost an Amy Grant song. You see, Mercy Me was starting out, and as Christian groups or any group start to do, they often sell their songs to somebody else who's more famous to them, so they can kind of survive for a while to get enough money to survive. And so they were at least in the process of giving that song to Amy Grant. And she got up on stage to perform the song and realized it was not the most righteous choice she could have made. Now, she had every legal right, from what I understand, to sing the song. And if she would have, she would have had, this is like the second half of her career, of course, and so she would have been recognized all over again by these people thinking, oh, Amy Grant's back, and she's full-bloom stardom, and she'd have made all this money off the song, and she just would have just, wait a minute, money, recognition, the two things that fight for the top priority of my life. And she made a choice at that point. I can't do this. I can't do this. It's not the most righteous thing to do. So she called the songwriter, Bart Millard, for Mercy Me, up on stage. He was in the audience to hear her perform it for the first time. And she said, you sing it. It's your song. I'm giving it back to you. And the rest is history. The song has launched their career. We only know the song not by Amy Grant, but we know it by Mercy Me. She could have chose differently. In the bulletin today, there's just two simple application questions. And this is something for, if this is your first time ever making a commitment to God, I'd love to know that. Boy, I would love to know that. And I would encourage you and help you if I can. But if you are renewing your commitment, we just need to do that regularly. We need to renew our commitment. God, you're first. I must choose you first. Not money, not people recognition. I must choose you. If you need that little push today, check that box. Take home that little sheet, rip it out of your bulletin or whatever, post it somewhere. I'm getting back to making God number one in my life. Not number two, not number three, not people recognition, not money. God, you are number one in my life. I encourage you, take that renewal, that step today, check that box and go home and recommit to God as top priority in your life.